gathered here tonight, a wet, gray day, to talk about sin and death. This is not usually what we choose to talk about. We often do a lot to avoid talking about this. But very intentionally now, we turn toward these, both of these things, rather than away from them. I want to be very clear that these two things, sin and death, are not directly connected. Even though religion in its early forms and in its current unreflected forms combine these two. Take, for instance, the Garden of Eden, a story where the world is perfect until Adam's desire for more than enough, his overreach, gets him and Eve ejected from the garden, and as the story goes, so comes pain and suffering and physical death. It's a great story, a great metaphor in an early time to describe why the world is the way it is. Why we're in such a mess. But when it gets linked to physical death, or when it gets linked to what Paul starts talking about in Romans, that the wages of sin is death, he's not talking about physical death, but spiritual death. We'll talk about that in a minute. Then it becomes toxic. I want to separate the two for a minute and see how they are not the same and also then how they relate. First, death. And I'm talking about physical death. Our death. Everything in the cosmos is changing form. From the very beginning, 13 billion years ago until now, everything is passing in and out of its form. Form of any kind is impermanent. When I was at the train station this morning with Mother Louise and Kate and Barb, getting ashes to folks who were getting on the train, I looked at the ashes and it suddenly occurred to me, this, I guess, obvious thing, but these ashes literally, not figuratively, literally came from the heart of stars trillions of miles away from where we are now and billions of years ago. And all of us are also that stuff. That's just science. It's pretty wild. Everything's been recycled that many times. And not just recycled, but it's evolving. It's becoming. That life, the opposite of life is not death. The opposite of death is birth. Life is bigger than all of that. We are part of life. So death is normal. It is not a part of the brokenness of the world. It is a part of the wholeness of the world. Sin. As I said a couple of weeks ago, the biblical idea of sin is not something that has a lot of moral, emotional freight to it. It simply means missing the mark, or I think a better way of translating it is unaligned. So that spiritual death that Paul is talking about is not some arbitrary infliction of punishment, but it's just what happens in an unaligned system. If you choke something off, it's going to die. We see a lot of spiritual death in our world. But this misalignment that creates this twist happens in the most natural ways. And I think this is important for us to, it's important for me anyway, to sit with. We're born, we come into this world with this highly evolved part of ourselves that can differentiate, that it is the self aware of the self. what we call ego. And it's all about distinction. I am not that, you know. I am not my mother, that first distinction. I am not you. This is not that. And that distinction is all based on form. So it learns to tell all the differences of forms, but as great as that is, there's a problem built into this, because every form is passing away. So because it's all changing, we've got this hardware, this software, this operating system that perceived it, the disillusion of things, the changing of things, especially our own disillusion, as the ultimate threat. And so we become defended against that change. We're addicted to form. And the strategy, the success of all this, depends on us not knowing it's going on in the background, that we self-justify our behavior, not as part of the ego's clever way of kind of rigging life to keep itself intact, when of course it can't, it won't, we will not stay intact. It can't happen. But we try in these really subtle ways. I'm not going to actually detail any of them, but listen to your own words when we get to the litany. It's the one time a year we go deep into just opening up the books and saying, this is how we live. What I was saying a few weeks ago, the difference between what we say we do and what we actually do. Here's the gap. We just open it up. Say, yep, it's there. It's there in a big way, a lot of times. That's what the ego doesn't want us to see. So this beautiful tool that we have evolved, which helps us find our place in the world, it also will misalign and mangle us if it doesn't find its place in a larger fullness of being. There's a number of celebrities and leaders, I'm being oblique but wouldn't need to be, who are currently very good mirrors to us of what this mangled and misaligned life looks like. And they're not other than us. They are us if we don't attend to this inner work, this natural but unnatural thing. It's like we're half-evolved creatures on the way to something. And that's why we do Lent. To open up the book, be able to, you know, once the game is up, once we can kind of see ourselves at our own game, then the chance is there to step beyond it, step into a different place. Remember that you are dust, and to dust you shall return. When I was in college, that's when I first found the Episcopal Church. I went to Wheaton College, an evangelical liberal arts college in Wheaton, Illinois. Came from a fundamentalist background, so not familiar with the Episcopal Church really at all, except that we knew they didn't believe anything. It was the kind of the brunch crowd. We didn't know any of them. There wasn't any Episcopal Church nearby where I grew up. But I stumbled across a kind of Pied Piper character at the college who was an Episcopalian, and so I followed him to church. And my memory is that Ash Wednesday was the first Sunday I went to church. Quite a way to start that journey. And I will remember for the rest of my life that moment where I knelt down at the altar and the priest came and scraped my forehead and said those words, "Remember that you are dust, and to dust you shall return." And something happened that was physical and emotional and psychological, and it surprised me. I felt relief. I did not know how much I was carrying. What a message. I came from a kind of heroic Christianity. And that message just made weight fall from my shoulders. I felt light, giddy, and almost emotionally tender. This is one of the first times in life I felt permission to be temporary, to be frail, to be partial, to fail, and that was okay. That was normal. That was part of reality, part of being a form. It was alignment with reality, capital R. Remember that you are dust, and to dust you shall return. It's not about sin. This is about the reality of the transformation of all forms. And remembering that this form is passing, that it is not permanent, and that holding on to it is the very thing that creates suffering, sin, death, spiritual death. Gives us the opportunity to spring that prison. It's been said that the purpose of religion at its mature levels is to help the ego relax, give it a rest. Or it's been presented another way. The goal of religion is to help us die before we die. Let that small, separate self go, be replaced, or not really replaced, but find its place in the larger connected self, what Thomas Merton called our true self. Something beyond that isolated self, beyond form, tied into the source of being from which it arises and to which it returns. Well, that creates for me a very different picture of Lent than the traditional one of, we're not worthy and feeling bad for our sins. I mean, it's that my bulletin went away. Here it is. It's hard for our ears to hear what is a beautiful but somewhat antique collect, worthily lamenting our sins and acknowledging our wretchedness. That can be a wonderful thing to do when it comes from inside, when it's this recognition of the misalignment that we have made of our lives by letting our ego just run rampant. But it is, really, this season is an invitation to simply listen deeply and open up to something deeper. Shedding an old skin that is too small, or coaxing the ego to relax from its game of pretending and preserving. Living without all that sludge is a lot easier. So I invite you to a holy Lent, a light Lent. Hallow this time as a chance to look deeply and truly toward your soul's liberation. I'm going to come down. I'm not going to do this a lot, but I'm coming down out of the pulpit to ground myself, and I'm going to invite you to do the same thing, to feel, sit, just stay seated on the bench, but feel your weight in the bench. Put your feet on the floor. Get yourself in a position where you're aware of your body. Close your eyes if you like. And sit with this question. has already died in me. I'm carrying it around, but it's time to let it go. Another question. What am I hungry for? Where is that holy hunger that is the promise of something yet to be born, yet to be raised? Invite the question without looking for an answer yet. Let the answer come in its time. As you sit with whatever comes up, we're going to sit in silence for just 2 minutes. And to lead us into the silence, I'm going to teach you a song that comes from Jewish friends of mine, Isabella Friedman Retreat Center, in their Yom Kippur season, which is the equivalent of our Lent. And pick it up as you get it.